Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And good afternoon, everybody, and welcome, welcome. Well, Alaska's billion-dollar fishing industry is one of the most closely monitored in the world, but there are serious causes for concern. And last show, I mentioned that the Rainbow Warrior, Greenpeace's ship, was in dock for family tours. They're starting a West Coast tour, which ended in Seattle this weekend. They're heading down to Portland and then down to San Francisco, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. But last Wednesday, I was lucky enough to have a tour of that particular ship down on Pier 66 here in Seattle. And while I was there, I talked with several people to learn more about the work that Greenpeace is doing in the Bering Sea and an area that scientists call the Green Belt within that Bering Sea. And today I'll bring you interviews with Greenpeace Captain Joel Stewart and Senior Campaigns Manager Jackie Dragon, who will share their perspectives on the Bering Sea and why it's so important ecologically, and why we must work to ensure its healthy future, why it's important to our future at large. I also asked each of them how they respond to criticism of Greenpeace, because we all know that organizations who try to make change are also subject to criticism from other groups. Before I introduce them, I pre-recorded these interviews, obviously. We're going to bring those to you today. I just want to welcome my brother back in the studio here with us. He's here from England. He's if you didn't catch a show last week, he's staying with me for a couple of weeks. He's only got 4 days left and then he's going to go home. But Colin Barnett, welcome.
Hi, everybody.
And it's been a lot of fun. We're going to hopefully have a little few minutes at the end of the show to tell you what we've been up to while he's been here. So let's get down to business here. We have some important information to share from Greenpeace. A little bit of background. They have three ships in addition to the Arctic Sunrise, which remains detained in Russia following a peaceful protest against Arctic oil drilling. They have the Esperanza, they have the Rainbow Warrior at sea. And that's the ship that I went down to take a tour around with Colin. And I'm going to bring you the interview that I had with Joel Stewart, who's the captain of that particular ship, the Rainbow Warrior. And my first question to Joel was, of course, you know, what was it about Greenpeace that drew you to it? What pulled you into that and what he's been doing with them? So here's Joel's background a little in his own words.
Well, I've been working on ships all my life. I started out fishing up in Alaska and then running cargo vessels from Seattle up to Alaska. And I wanted to work for an environmental organization that was doing something to promote a clean environment and peace, and that has a sailing vessel, because I like to sail also. And Greenpeace is a perfect fit for me. So I applied for a job, and shortly after the Exxon Valdez oil spill, I increased my pressure to, they told them I really wanted to work for them, and they put me on as a job on the second Rainbow Warrior, and in 1989, I've been working with Greenpeace ever since.
Oh, wow. So quite a long time then. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been on quite a few of the Greenpeace vessels and sailing around the world and a lot of different campaigns, and I still enjoy it. I have a lot of respect and admiration for my colleagues, and I like Greenpeace as an organization. It has a very good strategic vision. It's making a real impact. It's making a positive change in the world. And I think Greenpeace really gets the message and the campaign right. And it's a real honor for me to work with him.
And you could see that in Joel's face when I was talking with him. As I found with everybody at Greenpeace, they were very passionate about the work that they do. And they really believe in the power of the work that they do. The campaign that we were talking about when I met with the crew of the Rainbow Warrior is built around the Bering Sea. And I asked Joel from his perspective as captain, you know, why is this such a critical campaign and why is it so important to him personally?
That's where I started working on ships. I worked up there crab fishing, and during the summers I was up in Bristol Bay salmon tending. So I know the Bering Sea. I've been up there quite a few times. I've been up there with Greenpeace, and it's really a beautiful, magnificent ecosystem. It's one of my favorite places on Earth. It's just full of life. It's a spectacular place. I mean, from the seabirds to whales to the fish to what's on the bottom. I've been diving up there. It's just an absolutely rich, incredible place. And I've hiked around quite a few of the Aleutian Islands. It's a fantastic place. I haven't had the opportunity to go to the Deepwater Canyons, but I've seen the video footage coming back, and I know the importance of having marine reserves. And we have to have some places like this that are hands-off to especially the bottom trawling. But we need to leave some areas that are in a pristine condition before we destroy what we don't even understand yet.
Right. So let's talk about overfishing a little. And Jackie shared some information on that. But one of the things I've noticed when I've traveled around the world, and even up here in Vancouver, is how many people are fish farming in the ocean. Mm-hmm. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
In general, fish farming is not a good thing because the species that are chosen for farming, and in BC, it's absolutely not a good idea. We're putting at risk a very healthy, viable, what used to be a healthy, viable fish stock, and now it's under threat from a lot of different things, from logging to mining to the old pulp mills, and in some cases overfishing. But the big threat now is that they're getting diseases, and that's very good, compelling evidence to show that the wild salmon farms are exposing the salmon farms are exposing the wild runs of salmon to diseases, and that's running the risk of losing some of the runs, and I don't want to see that happen during my watch. So one of the important things to remember about farming carnivorous fish is it takes a large input of food. I don't know what the numbers, some people say 4-1 or 20-1 of as how many pounds or kilos of feed you have to get the protein back. And you have to remember that catching that small fish is depleting an ecosystem someplace, and quite often the small fish fisheries are not well moderated. I've seen this examples of this down in Chile, where they're bringing big factory trawlers in, and the local fishermen were complaining because they couldn't get any fish. And so if you want to talk about feeding people, it's actually far more efficient to do a direct using the small fish directly to feed people, and not try to feed particular fish species just because they bring a higher dollar value. So it's really a matter of economics. It's not a matter of protein. But we have to consider that the real threat to the oceans right now is climate change, and that the worlds are getting more acidic because the oceans are absorbing CO2. So it's kind of a moot point to argue too much about overfishing and everything if we don't do something to get CO2 out of the atmosphere and keep the oceans from getting too acidic. And that's going to be a major threat to the global oceans. And that's something we really have to take into consideration. And so you have to think about cumulative impacts on any particular fisheries, whether it's a habitat destruction or overfishing or toxic pollution. For example, the fertilizer runoff from the rivers of nitrogen and phosphates that creates algae blooms, and the algae drops to the bottom of the ocean, and the bacteria process depletes the oxygen, and this causes huge die-off dead zones. You know, all these accumulative impacts are affecting the fish. So the oceans are in trouble, and Greenpeace does have a plan to fix them. And one of the plans is a series of marine reserves. And so the Deepwater Canyons in Pribilofs is crucial to our global campaign of creating a network of marine reserves.
And one of the things Joel talked about is that he really does encourage people to go down and see the ship. I'm assuming it has left Seattle now. They had the weekend event this last weekend, but it does hit Portland November 2nd, I think it is. I'll tell you that for sure in just a second. And then it goes on down to San Francisco. And he talked a little about the boat, which was a really interesting experience going around the boat. And it's the first time that Greenpeace has ever designed and built a unique ship specifically for a campaign. And they wanted to build that to lower their carbon footprint. So the ship is a sailing vessel. It's got two large A-frame masts. It was built actually with donations from crowdsourcing at $1 a bolt, which I thought was really interesting too. You know, like any other organization that challenges authority or corporate agendas, Greenpeace has received its fair share of criticism. And I asked Captain Joel Stewart what he had to say about that. And the biggest thing I took away was he really does want to encourage open dialogue. Here's what he had to say.
regardless of what you might think about Greenpeace, it's a very interesting vessel to see. It's quite unique, so I encourage people to come down. And then we want to have a chance to talk to people and get some information out to them. And if they have misconceptions about Greenpeace, let's discuss it. We're open to dialogue and would like to talk to people about all the issues here locally.
Well, I asked Jackie how she responded to criticism of Greenpeace, and since you just brought that up, you know, some people do question. What is your response to that?
Well, it depends on the individual criticism. I mean, you know, we're...
And it's not just Greenpeace. I mean, people criticize anybody who's trying to change things and take, as they perceive it, something away from
them. Sure, people are afraid of change, but I think that changing the world into a cleaner, more sustainable, healthier lifestyle is good. And there's just a lot of misconceptions out about Greenpeace. People don't understand us. They confuse us with other organizations, or they think that we're militant, or, and, you know, like, for example, people come and say, aren't you the ones that blew up the French ship in New Zealand? And no, actually, it was the French government that blew up our vessel when we were peacefully protesting, not breaking any laws, trying to stop atmospheric testing in French-occupied Polynesia. So this is a good example of how people hear something in the media, but they don't quite connect the dots. And so we'd like to help let people know what we're really about. We really have the same goal as many of the fishermen. I just was on a sustainable fish tour in Europe on the Arctic Sunrise last summer, and we went around from fishing community to fishing community. We had flotillas and town hall meetings, and we had a great amount of support from the small, local, artisanal fishermen that have been fishing all their lives. Their grandfathers have been fishing, and they want to pass the fisheries on to their sons. So we have the same goals as most fishermen around the world that want to have the fishing last into perpetuity. You know, sustainable fisheries means proper management and taking care of the stocks and making them healthy. So we need to look at ways to make the oceans healthier and improve the fish stocks.
Oh. And so I obviously wanted to ask him how we could, what we can do personally, what's his call to action on this. And this is what Captain Joel Stewart finished with.
To me, the priority is to go to our webpage and sign on to free the Arctic 30. The Arctic 30 are the people on the Arctic Sunrise that did a peaceful protest to an oil rig in the Russian Arctic. It would have been the first production oil platform in the Arctic. And they got arrested. They were first charged with piracy. And we don't know what all they're going to be charged with, but it's quite a serious threat. They've been in prison for over 30 days, and they're facing long-term jail threats. So we want to get our people freed, and this is an important step towards democracy, freedom of speech, and not letting large corporations take over our planet. A little bit of background on Russia. I mean, you know, they've have tremendous oil spills, like something like half of the world's oil spills are up in the Russia, and I don't know what the figures are exactly. I've heard 300 million barrels a year, which is like much more than what was in the Gulfwater Horizon spill. You don't hear much about that. The Arctic is a very pristine environment. It's very full of life. It's very rich. It's not a barren wasteland. You know, it has a lot to protect, and you can't clean oil spills up in the ice in the cold. That's been well proven, and it's extremely reckless and dangerous to try to drill in the Arctic. And whether it's Gazprom in Russia or Shell in Alaska or any of the other oil companies that are hovering around the Arctic, now that the ice is melting because of global warming, we want to see that protected. So we want to have a global sanctuary in the Arctic where we're going to be able to preserve this area.
Yeah, well, thank you. Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, just please help get my friends out of prison. You know, they're really suffering in there. Go sign the petition. Keep the pressure up.
And if you do want to add your voice to that petition, you can find out more information at greenpeace.org and just look for the Arctic 30 page. It gives you a lot more information there about the current state of what's happening to those Greenpeace employees and two reporters who were along with them who are facing up to 7 years in jail. One of the things I took away from this was Joel Stewart made a comment about, you know, I don't want this to happen on my watch. And I think that's something that, you know, I want to be more mindful about as I go about my day-to-day life and what I'm doing. and how I'm impacting things. We're going to take a very quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Jackie Dragon, and she is the Senior Campaigns Manager at Greenpeace on this Bering Sea campaign. She's going to tell us a little bit more about the science and the culture, how it's being affected up there, and a new species that they also found. So please stay with us. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair with Conversations Live. If you'd like to gain more exposure for your business, service, or event, or if you'd like to raise awareness for an issue or topic you're passionate about, call me. Let's talk about ways we might partner to shine the spotlight on you and bring you the recognition you deserve. Call me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Clear, clean, and crisp. Check us out in digital quality sound on FM 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
It's a hard rain in the ghetto, baby. What else can you supposed to do?
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And we're half live and half taped today because last week I had the opportunity of going down to see Greenpeace's the Rainbow Warrior, the ship that was at a Pier 66 here in Seattle. And I got a chance to talk with some of the crew and the captain, Joel Stewart. We just played the interview with him, and now we're going to be playing some of the conversation that I had with Jackie Dragon, who's the Senior Campaigns Manager. Let me tell you a little bit about Jackie. Her background includes union organization. She was a representative for healthcare workers all over California. And then she got more into the environmental kind of world, if you will. She worked with Pacific Environments, and then she started working with Greenpeace. And she is going to share more in this segment about the Rainbow Warrior Tour and why they think it's important, why they're doing it. She'll also share a little bit more about the Native Alaskan communities and why the health of the Bering Sea is so critical to the survival of their life. And of course, you know, how we're impacting it and how it will ultimately impact us. And she'll also share some information about a new species that they found in the Bering Sea. So I'm going to bring that to you right now. And we start out with Jackie just telling us a little bit about the Rainbow Warrior Tour, the West Coast Tour.
The Rainbow Warrior is heading down the West Coast right now. This is an opportunity for us really to bring the ship into these ports all along the West Coast and engage the people and give people a chance to be on board one of our most amazing campaign tools. This ship, the Rainbow Warrior, was actually built and designed specifically for Greenpeace, so it's custom built to support the kind of campaigning that we do all over the world. So it's a tremendous chance for people to hear about the campaigns, the work that we're doing to protect the Arctic. In my case, more of the work that we're doing to protect the oceans and to create marine sanctuaries estuaries, in the high seas, as well as in our local waters. It's really an opportunity for people to touch firsthand the work, learn about what we're doing, and hopefully have a chance to really experience the magic of a ship like the Rainbow Warrior.
And I can see as you're talking, you're very passionate about this, your eyes light up. What is it that drives you to do this kind of work and keep going with it? Because I'm sure it's not very easy some days when you're out there on the Bering Sea, for example.
True enough. Cracking that Bering Sea nut is not an easy thing at all. I think certainly what drives me is wanting so very much to take care of the home that we have, this blue planet. And it is a blue planet. The ocean is my first love. And so I'm doing what I love and following what I love. But any of us today are more aware than we ever have been that the ocean isn't inexhaustible. It won't just take the beating that humanity has to give it forever and keep producing what it does for us. The ocean, for instance, provides you know, every second breath that we take. So I have a passion about helping people appreciate that we have to take care of the ocean and not just the land. We've protected amazing places on land. You know, the Grand Canyon is a place that we've protected, but we have Grand Canyons in the sea, in the middle of the Bering Sea. And we may not be able to visit them with our families on vacation in the Bering Sea, but we do need to make sure that they're protected, because if we want fish for the future, we're going to have to make sure that there's habitat for that fish and that we're not ripping it up in order to reap the benefits that we can get by scooping up just massive amounts of fish all at once. We have to have some balance. So my work is about figuring out how to create some balance, how to have protected areas next to places that we fish.
Right. And I understand you've been out working on this with local cultures who are basically they're losing their livelihood because of overfishing. Talk to us a little about that, if you would.
Well, in the Bering Sea, particularly right in the middle of the Bering Sea on the Pribilof Islands, there are Aleut communities. These are Native Alaskan communities and people who have for many thousands of years lived in balance with the ocean. And I've had the chance to go and meet them and see where they live and learn about that subsistence way of life that is so much in the fabric of their culture. For them, the Bering Sea is their garden, and it brings them everything in their lives. And frankly, it's frightening and scary to see that they're on the cusp of possibly losing that way of life. The fish that were there and the other foods that they subsist on are no longer so accessible. These are people that don't have massive boats that aren't industrial fishing. They have local smaller fishing boats, but they're not able to find those resources as easily. Or the fur seals that are so much a part of their culture are no longer there in the same numbers. And we're watching that species dip just every year by extraordinary numbers. The population goes down and down, and we don't know exactly why. There's so many questions, mm-hmm. so much that we don't know. Right. And yet we continue to extract the resources out of the ocean as if they'll go on forever.
So are these people concerned about their future? Are they really aware of what's going on since they're so isolated?
Well, I wouldn't venture to speak for the people directly, but I can say from some of the stories that they've told me, they love their lives. I've met people as far up as Point Hope on the North Slope who have had a chance to visit many parts of the U.S., and yet what they want most is to come home to their own communities and to be able to support those communities and to be able to make sure that their culture goes on, that they can continue the way of life that has been so meaningful to them. So they are seeing a change. They're seeing climate change. They're seeing some of their communities really be faced with literally slipping into the ocean with climate change. And of course, there's the threat of oil drilling that is happening, mm-hmm. and that incredible tension of needing an economy. They need to be able to make a living, and they also are trying to hold on to a way of life.
Yeah. So, Jackie, tell me what you say, because I'm sure you hear criticism of Greenpeace, and you know there are people out there who do criticize Greenpeace. Tell us how you respond to that on a global scale.
For me, what I've experienced in my time working for Greenpeace is the most passionate, heartful, committed group of people that I've ever met in my life. And every one of them is fighting to make sure that we will leave a planet for the next generation, for people's grandchildren, that whales won't be a thing of the past and trees, you know, that we will have more than just some small postage stamp museums to visit that represent nature and this planet. There is so much at stake, and we must ring that alarm bell. We must get a lot of people to pay attention if we're going to change things, because what still seems to drive the way forward is corporate greed. And when there's that much corporate greed, sometimes you have to take a stronger stand, and sometimes you have to bear witness, and sometimes you have to go places and do things that ring that alarm bell so that enough people will move together and create the kind of political will that can stand up to corporate greed. So that's what I think of Greenpeace. I think that we're doing something that needs to be done. And I can also say that there's always going to be criticism in the world. But, you know, I can't tell you how many people I have met that are simply grateful that we are doing something that needs right. to be done in the world. So I'm quite proud of right. the work that we do.
And standing up for those of us who can't be out there doing that. I understand you have you're always discovering new species, but you have a new sponge, I understand. You came back with something new. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, the Bering Sea, as we said, is an extraordinary place. And my campaign, the Bering Sea Campaign, is about trying to create some protection for those extraordinary, largest underwater canyons in the world. Very underexplored areas. And yet, right in the middle of the Bering Sea, where the United States catches more than half of their seafood. It's our largest fisheries. It's $1 billion fishery for pollock, which is the stuff of fish sticks and fish McBites right. and imitation crab meat, which is all very good and well, and nobody wants us not to be able to eat those fish sticks. But again, we have to strike a balance. And what we have been saying, along with other environmental organizations going on for more than 10 years now, is this is a special place. Fish need habitat. They actually need corals and sponges, places to hide and to get out of the current or to get away from predators or to find foods. And we have been saying those canyons along that shelf break, that most productive, vibrant place in the Bering Sea, is a place that we should be cautious of, because in fact, the trawl gear that is running through the Bering Sea to scoop up millions and millions of metric tons of fish, I believe 3 billion pounds wow. of fish this year, that's incredibly heavy, massive fishing gear. We're talking about nets with a mouth the size of a football field. And when they drag across the seafloor, they rip away habitat. They rip away small animals that are creating the most important living spaces in the Bering Sea. And fish, of course, they need places to spawn. They need places to be safe as juveniles. They need to be able to grow up so that they can swim into the mouths of fur seals and sea lions and fishermen's nets. Right. So we have to have some balance. And for us, there's a great concern about striking that balance. We have a system where the voices that are being heard more often than any others by fishery managers are those of the industry that profits from continuing to fish. And they err on the side of, let's fish and fish and fish until we can be absolutely certain that there's a problem here. We think it makes sense to have an insurance policy for the future. You don't want to rip away corals and sponges that have mm-hmm. taken hundreds of years to develop. And when we went down, as you asked, in just a very, very short exploration of the Bering Sea, for the first time, a manned exploration, we discovered a brand new species of sponge. We know that there are medical opportunities that we have yet to even discover. So the question is, do we want to rip all that out and maybe miss the chance to find something that could make the difference in people's lives, that could actually be significant for disease? Or do we want to stop and set aside a portion of it, not all of it, but a portion of it, as a place for scientists to learn and study, to understand the difference between the impacts of fishing and climate change, for instance? Right now, we don't have that. It's really an uncontrolled science experiment. It's the best available science, and it's quite good when you consider what's out there, but it's full of uncertainty. So we'd like to be precautionary and to make sure that part of that is protected.
And we're going to take a very quick break. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, talking with some of the crew of Greenpeace, and that was Jackie Dragon, senior oceans campaigner. And we'll be talking to Jackie when we come back about some of the challenges that are presented on being on board. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please do stay with us. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
This is Martha Norwalk, host of Animal World. This week, November 3rd, we'll entertain the human animal as we celebrate Mike's second anniversary with the show. Earlier this year, Mike said he'd like to have a conversation with one of our founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin. Our in-studio guest, Greg Barone, will grant Mike that request. As a channel for Ben, Greg says Ben is as witty and energetic as he was in the 1700s, and he loves to talk with 21st century Americans. Better join us for this one. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Coming November 4th on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Can art therapy really heal you mentally, physically, and spiritually? Vicky explores this topic with guest experts Dr. Michael Samuels and Dr. Mary Rockwood Lane, authors of Healing with the Arts, a 12-week program to heal yourself and your community. Find guest details at conversationslive.net.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Tired of the insanity of other talk radio stations? Just click your radio knob and say, there's no place like Alternative Talk 1150.
In your room, I saw the crescent.
And welcome back, everybody. We are sharing some of the conversations I had on the Rainbow Warrior, Greenpeace's ship, down at Pier 66 earlier last week. And we just heard from Jackie Dragon. We're going to hear another little segment here from Jackie Dragon, who's the senior oceans campaigner for Greenpeace, and specifically around the Bering Sea. And we're going to talk about the importance of the science they're finding on what she calls the living rooms of the Bering Sea,
And, you know, those crew are 3 months on the ship at a time and 3 months off. I mean, what kind of challenges does that present? I asked Jackie, and here's what she had to say.
For folks who are on the ships, that's very much what the life is like. And those people, many of them that I've met and that you'll meet, are in love with the sea, I think, and in love with being at sea. And I have to admit, I've caught the bug myself a little bit. You know, having the chance to sail all the way up to the Arctic and actually the challenge of getting into a tiny submarine and diving 2,000 feet beneath the ocean was exhilarating. And
you weren't at all scared.
Yes, I was. I kid you not. I thought about what letters to send home before closing the hatch and going down. And there were, I kid you not, there were certainly some frightening moments and some question marks in my mind about whether or not everything was going to work when I was down there on the deep bottom. I wasn't the one that got the most claustrophobic. No, to be honest, I would never say no to such an amazing opportunity to be able to go where no person has ever gone before. And of course, that science is so important for the work we're doing because, again, what the fishing industry has told us for years is there's nothing to worry about down there. We got it covered. We're catching fish. It's not a problem. There's nothing but mud and sand and silt. Don't worry. Well, we thought differently, and in fact, we were right. There is life down there. There are corals and sponges and habitat that really make up the living rooms of the sea. And we think that to protect those fisheries for the future, to make sure that we continue to have fish and to have an ecosystem that is healthy, where whales and seabirds and all the rest of it are going to continue to thrive with the kind of biodiversity that doesn't exist everywhere. The Bering Sea is probably, arguably, one of the most important large marine ecosystems in the world. So this is a moment where we wanted to say, let's find out what's there. And one of the extraordinary things about Greenpeace is being able to take a ship like the Rainbow Warrior, or in that case, the Esperanza, to be able to take a submarine and work with partners and go down and get that science and bring it back to the decision makers, back to the policy table to say, okay, here's literally the best available science. Seeing is believing. Yeah. There is life there that we need to protect.
Yeah, and I think it's really exciting that we're still finding new things because we think we know everything today.
There is a lot of that, and you are always going to find people, again, motivated by profit, who will tell you that we don't have anything to worry about and we can keep going with business as usual. Part of the work that I am doing and that I know Amber's going to talk to you a little bit more about is helping to bring all of the stakeholders to the table. We brought that science back because, frankly, the decision makers were saying, we don't know enough to protect the canyons. And short of knowing that there's anything important down there to worry about, we're simply going to keep fishing. That was 2006. In 2007, Greenpeace took a ship and a submarine down. And a few years later, we published peer-reviewed science, including discovering a brand new species, including many records of species range extensions further north than scientists ever knew they existed. We discovered 15 species of coral down there that were creating important habitat for the life and the animals. And so what we are doing is working directly in the system, going to these North Pacific Fishery Management Council meetings, building relationships, doing our best to really collaborate and say, let's get together and get to work on what the right answer is. We are simply saying, begin the process to figure out what we should do to protect these extraordinary areas. They have to report to Congress every other year on what they're doing to protect it. And right now, the report simply says it's awaiting protection. We are bringing the public stakeholders to the table, too, because these waters belong to all of us, not just to people who profit from fishing there. So I want to know that I have a healthy ocean to pass down to my grandchildren, for instance. And that means there's an ocean that is full of biodiversity that we haven't fished out and crashed species and waited until too much of that habitat, that long-lived coral habitat that takes hundreds of years, is gone. And then we say, oh, now we know what we didn't know then, that actually that's a problem. We'd rather be precautionary with a bit of it. Definitely, we want to keep fishing. We want to make sure that fish keeps coming to shelves. We just want to make sure it's sustainable. And that means you're protecting the habitat.
I think that's a key thing. I think, and that's where a lot of criticism comes, not just about Greenpeace, but a lot of activism groups. People think that you're trying to take everything away, and you're not. You're just trying to do it in a way that is sustainable. If listeners, I was going to ask you for your call to action, but you've kind of just gave that to us very succinctly, I have to say. So if listeners hear nothing else from this, what you've just told us, what is it you want them to hear? What can they personally do? How can they personally make a difference?
I would say the first step is go to BeringSeaCanyons.org. There you will find out what is happening in this campaign to protect the most extraordinary underwater canyons in the world. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we could all, not too far from now, say we made sure that this place on the planet, on the blue planet in the ocean, is safe. This hope spot is safe for the future and is going to teach us what we've only begun to learn about it.
And Jackie went on to say that that coral reef, it's the largest in the Bering Sea, that is, and it still remains unprotected. She went on to say that it's the most productive area of the Bering Sea. It's scientists call it the Green Belt. I think I said that at the top of the hour. And they say that it must be protected as soon as possible. And in June of this year, the decision makers acknowledged that they know enough to put those protections in place, but apparently this month they said, well, we might not get back to it until spring of 2014. And then I guess they went on to say it might be even summer of 2014. But the good news is that with public support, they do now have NOAA scientists confirming those decisions for the science for those decision makers. And I think one thing that I stuck in my mind when I was talking with Jackie is that, you know, ecologically, we have to look at the cost of a fish stick. Not that they're trying to dissuade people from having fish sticks, but it's all about striking a balance. And that's what they're all about. That's what they're looking for, really. So go to BeringSeaCanyons.org if you want more information. And they've got some really good information, some good videos up there telling you more about that. And let me tell you a little bit about the West Campaign Tour dates. I promised I would do that. And they are actually going to be in Portland. Actually, they're going to be in Vancouver, Washington, in the Portland area. November 2nd and 3rd from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. And again, they are offering family-friendly boat tours. You can just look around the boat, and they have children's activities like face painting and stuff like that. And it's free. It's free. And it's just down the highway in Vancouver, Washington. And also, they'll be moving then on to San Francisco, November 9th and 10th, 16th and 17th. And you can find out more about that, of course, at greenpeace.org. All right, we're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be right back with you. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Silver and black, the powerful fins. They say you could split a mountain in two. That's how we got the Grand Canyon. Last great American whale. Last great American whale. Last great American whale. Last great American whale.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair with Conversations Live. If you'd like to gain more exposure for your business, service, or event, or if you'd like to raise awareness for an issue or topic you're passionate about, call me. Let's talk about ways we might partner to shine the spotlight on you and bring you the recognition you deserve. Call me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at pause.org or call 425-787-2500.
If you served honorably in our nation's armed forces and you're looking for a way to continue serving your fellow veterans in your community, then join AMVETS. Each year, AMVETS members volunteer millions of hours at VA healthcare facilities from coast to coast, helping to improve the lives of their fellow veterans through the VA Voluntary Services Program. AMVETS posts and departments also participate in a wide variety of community service projects, ranging from Americanism in our schools to supporting the Special Olympics and Boy Scouts of America. If you no longer wear the uniform today, you can still serve through the AMVETS by joining today at AMVETS.org.
Coming November 4th on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Can art therapy really heal you mentally, physically, and spiritually? Vicki explores this topic with guest experts Dr. Michael Samuels and Dr. Mary Rockwood Lane, authors of Healing with the Arts, a 12-week program to heal yourself and your community. Find guest details at conversationslive.net.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate, making a difference, one word at a time.
Body, mind, and spirit. Alternative Talk 1150 covers it all.
Last great American whale. Last great American whale. Last great American whale.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, I hope you enjoyed the interviews with Greenpeace Rainbow Warrior Captain Joel Stewart and senior campaigner Jackie Dragon. And I want to say a huge thank you to Eric Ryder because he pieced this together very quickly. We were scheduled to do something else and this opportunity came along. And so, Eric, whiz, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, it was a pleasure. It was great to hear from them. I didn't make it out to take one of the tours. And so it was nice to kind of live vicariously through you and Colin.
Yeah, I had a really, really fun time down there. I really enjoyed going on around the ship. Well, I wanted to save a couple of minutes because I have my brother, Colin Barnett, in the studio with me and just have a little chit chat with him. And we've been chit chatting all day long every day. But some of the things that I wanted to share was, we've been traveling around and doing all kinds of stuff. And one of the things, and I think, Colin, you mentioned this last week, but this week I heard it many, many times from him. We'd be in situations, come across people, and all of a sudden, you know, around Seattle area, the Washington area, and all of a sudden he'd go, "Aren't people nice here? I can't get over how nice the people are." So you're having fun, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been amazing. Bit of a whirlwind for me at the moment as well, because I've been out every day, but it's coming across to the people as well that's made a difference, and they are really, really friendly here.
Yeah.
Noticeably so.
Yeah. Well, we've been all over. We spent Friday and Saturday at Portland Way. We went up the east side of the gorge. I like to drive up the Washington side, stop at Bonneville Dam, and we go to the Bridge of the Guards and the Cascade Locks. And we drove up all the way up to Hood River on the east side and came back down on the west side. And of course, stopped at Columbia, what's that tower called? It's Vista House. Right at the end of the gorge. You've not been there, Eric, right?
I haven't. You know, this is what's great about having someone come and visit you, is you actually go and do the things that you've been meaning to do all the time that you live here, but never actually do because, well, I can do that. I can do that some weekend. And if it's me, you just don't get around to it until someone actually comes and stays with you. So that's fantastic that
you're
having
a chance. It's well worth getting out. It's been really, really impressive touring around. It's almost like a huge playground.
Yeah, it is. I mean, America's kind of got that reputation for being a huge playground. And we've got so much fantastic landscape here. That's one of the things that drew me to Washington. You know, obviously I was going back to school up here, but the landscape itself is just, it's breathtaking. And there's so much opportunity here. And I think I've been out to the gorge 7 times. And every time it's just a little different because you've got
the hills, you've got the wind, you've got water, and those seem to just make the weather,
skies are different. You've got so many features here with Mount Rainier and the mountains, etc. Each area's got its own weather system, I would imagine, at times. Yeah. They're massive.
Well, tell everyone about what happened when we came up here. We came up to Seattle for the second time, and we were walking around, and it was in fog, right? Down by the water, it's deep in fog. You walk halfway through Seattle and the rest of it's sunny. the east side of Seattle is sunny. And then we were walking down and I was thinking, I wonder if, you know, I couldn't remember if the tower was at Columbia Tower, that viewpoint. You can see the whole area from Columbia Tower. And I couldn't quite remember where it was. And this guy saw my brother shooting with his big old camera. And he stopped us and he said, you need to get up somewhere high now and look, because Mount Rainier has popped out above the cloud, above the fog. And so we asked somebody, she pointed us to Columbia Tower. We went up there and, tell them what that, another 2 hours, I think, we were up there.
it was quite weird, actually, because you kind of come out the lift and you're hit by the vista, because you've got the plate glass windows there. And it was just absolutely fantastic because you were well above the fog. And you've got the cranes, the tower blocks peeping out the fog at the top, and you've got the mountains in the distance. It was just absolutely stunning.
Yeah, we saw Mount Baker was popped up, Mount Rainier was popped up.
And again, just to show how friendly people are in this area, I mean, the security guards, was it, that switched the lights off when it started getting dark, just so that we could take better photographs in the evening as well.
Yeah.
And stop the reflection hitting the image on the glass.
Yeah, it was a fantastic. So if you like to shoot, well, if you just like to have a good view and you haven't been up Columbia Tower right here in Seattle, it is so worth it.
It's a must visit for any tourist,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. I mean, I've always slept people up the Space Needle, and that's still, unique and fantastic. This was a different experience. And, of course, we just managed to get way above the fog and the cloud, which was fantastic. And another day, we were deep in fog, South Sound. We could barely see, like, the car in front of us. And so we were like, okay, well, we can either spend another day in the fog or just drive. And we headed out east to, we headed southeast to Mount Rainier. It was nearly 70 degrees on Mount Rainier and brilliant sunshine.
It was hot. It was really hot.
So we had a fantastic day. So how many photographs, he is a shooter. So how many photographs have you taken?
I have to confess to about 5,000 since I've been. I've got some big memory cards.
So it's well documented now.
It is very well documented.
I have to say, though, I have lost a memory card in Gig Harbor. So if anybody does have one found, send it to Vicky.
Yeah, I'd sent him in a blue funk because he lost one of his memory cards when he was changing it. We got into Gig Harbor and it was in mist and fog and it was really kind of romantic looking. And
very atmospheric.
He loved the color of the buildings and was all excited. And then when we got home, he realized he'd lost his memory card. So he went in a blue funk. So yes, if you find a memory card down on Gig Harbor or Marina, right opposite Java Clay.
It's like digital amnesia.
There you go.
I lost my memory card.
Yeah. Well, I guess we need to be heading out of here pretty soon. So what? Give us quickly call in like 30 seconds or so what you're going to take away from this trip of America, how you see it differently, and because you used to live here.
Yeah, it's in Seattle. It's just the sheer range of things you can do, the culture, the people. Entirely different to my last experience when I lived in California. Highly recommended to anybody, and it's certainly a place I'd like to come back and visit in the future.
Yeah, and he also couldn't get how much people love dogs, because everybody stops me with my dog, don't they?
Yeah, I'd like to see the dog next to a young baby or something like that, see which they prefer, the dog or the baby.
But he's got it figured out. If ever he's single, he's going to come back to Seattle and get himself a dog. He'll get some attention. Well, it's been great having you here, and I wish you could stay longer. It's really gone quickly, but
I've got a few days left yet. So.
Yeah, well, tonight we're off to Foodpportunity, which is Karen Brown's event right here in Seattle for foodies, restaurateurs, food journalists, anyone who just plain old likes food. It's called foodpportunity.com. She usually sells out, but may have a few tickets left. I don't know. All right, so we have to head out of here, and I want to thank you for being with us today. If you've got any feedback on today's show, any questions or comments, or if you find my brother's memory card from his camera down in Gig Harbor, you can reach me at info@conversationslive.net, info@conversationslive.net. You can also reach me by phone if you prefer at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. And again, a huge thank you to Eric for jumping in and doing such a superb job of piecing that story together today.
Can I just say all the music that we played on today's show was featured on the Greenpeace fundraiser album that came out in the 80s called Rainbow Warriors. So I tied that in because you, of course, took a tour of the Rainbow Warrior ship. So,
yeah.
And the last song we played was, of course, the legendary Lou Reed, who sadly passed on this weekend. So R.I.P.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you taking time to do that and letting us know where all that came from. And again, you can find out more information about our guests and the phenomenal work they're doing at greenpeace.org or BeringSeaCanyons.org. Thanks for being with us. Live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.